you're back with the Geek Whisperers. I'm Matthew Brender.
I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And we're here to dig back into your favorite subject that keeps popping up, metrics, how to use them with social and why they matter at all. So to really guide us through that conversation, I brought the biggest guns I know of in my company, and that is Carrie D'Elia, who is our social listener and really everything analytics, and she can tell us a lot more about it. Carrie, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Cool. Well, tell us a little bit about your background. Just give us that that gut check to make sure we understand why you should be leading this conversation. I'm really interested in this.
I never said that I should be leading this conversation, but I will definitely give you my background. So I come to this with kind of an interesting perspective because I joined EMC not as a technologist, but instead as a specialist in the practice of social listening. So I spent the last several years at a couple different companies that do social listening. So one of them, I was actually in charge of putting together social listening programs for large CPG companies, so consumer products companies that have very, very high volume conversation, and putting together listening programs that help essentially channel social conversations into different groups, whether it's the shopper insights group or the merchandising group or the product innovation group. And it was a really cool position because I was able to feed these groups with very organic conversation. But I learned along the way that it's really tough when you're not actually in the company, because you give them all this great data and this great insights and you have no idea if and how they follow through on it.
Oh, interesting.
So it's interesting because I took that insight and I realized I wanted to get more on the media side of things. And so I jumped over actually to another vendor called Bluefin Labs, which they were actually just recently acquired by Twitter. And with that job, I actually spent more time learning the technology and insights behind what you can do with real-time social listening. So kind of this notion of having a second screen with social TV, and as people are tweeting about TV shows, giving insights to advertisers and TV networks around what essentially people are buzzing about TV. Both these companies are interesting because they both have very different applications of social listening, but they were both challenging for me because, again, I was never able to really take that insight and make it live and breathe at a company. And so that's really why I jumped over to EMC, is because I wanted to take this knowledge I have of social listening technologies and the insights you can gain from social listening and bring it into a company where I can actually develop a full program and really bring best practices to all the technologists who can then use this information.
That's great. That really gives us a lot of context for your journey on it. And it leads back into the conversation because we're here sitting in that social media world focused on enterprise technology. And we've gone back and forth, whether it's debating whether clout is totally useless or a good yardstick for us, or whether we should be trying to measure things at all. John, I know you've got a big opinion on this one. Do you want to jump right into it?
I'm the designated hitman tonight. Okay. Well, so Carrie, part of the conversation context here, that at least amongst the three of us, is we're actually, if you look at the whole spectrum of social media practitioners, the secret is we actually sit more on the community side than on the social media side. And Amy had this really brilliant concept of high listening versus low listening. And we do a lot of low listening. I call it going native. Like, we're part of the communities that we monitor, that we work with. We're geeks who like geeks. So I sit there and I follow 6,000 people on Twitter, and I follow Twitter all day in a second screen. And I know what's going on kind of intrinsically and qualitatively. That's very different than going with a listening program, you know, like a Radian 6 or whatever, and listening to the entire output of everybody that utters the name VMware.
Mm-hmm.
And we listen. We listen. We do. We mostly listen around. And here's one question that I'll put out for future. We listen around specific engagements, in part because we didn't have the right tools to listen all the time. But we'll listen around VMworld. And you'll go out and you'll say, well, okay, you know, you got 500,000 you know, you got 100,000 mentions and 500,000, a million impressions around VMworld, mostly on Twitter. It was bigger than last year. And it, you know, it obviously peaked around the days of the conference. Okay. So we report that up to our executives, and everyone pats themselves on the back, and that's the,
right. Right.
Who cares? What
we? So what? Yeah. So what? Right?
It's not going to change how we do VMworld last year. It's not going to change what we do after VMworld. It just made us feel good. So yep. So that's the context of like, why bother listening?
Listening is really interesting because it's a very kind of a very vague term for a very large discipline of things you can do. So what you just mentioned, the so what listening is what I'll call it, is just what you said, counting hashtags, for example. It is it's very easy. B, it's very easy to congratulate. Great, we got 10,000 hits on our hashtag. But I think what is so much more valuable and interesting is when you start to, first of all, sync that with other kinds of data. So yes, we have this much volume around our hashtag, but how much did it actually drive a higher click-through rate on our whatever our call to action was, for example, and sync it with other data from whether it's Omniture or Compete or what other data you have. Secondly, I'm a huge proponent of pairing qualitative practices around quantitative listening. So I think that. If you say, well, we have, 10,000 people talked about VMware this month. Well, great. But what were they talking about? Did the conversation shift? Has it shifted over time based on some messaging that you put out? What was the reaction to specific messaging you put out? I mean, I know sometimes there are times where you may have 20, 30, 40, 50,000 posts at a given time you're analyzing. But with text analytics and trend analysis and other things you can do, you can start to get a little bit more adding some color around that quant number that I think adds a lot more value.
I'm really glad you didn't say the word sentiment analysis, or I would have had to buzz you off the panel.
No. I will be the first person to cry about the ills of sentiment analysis as a blanket value. So no.
We're talking about listening and social listening. So how do we define social listening versus traditional metrics?
Sure.
So I know we've talked about high and low listening, like John said, but what do we think the line is between listening and metrics? And I know that may seem like an obvious question, but I like definitions.
I think that when you're essentially just saying, there was 10,000 uses of this hashtag, I would call that a metric. I would call listening, I would say, is putting together the numbers and then also the why behind it. Adding that level of when you're listening, you are actually, when you think about listening outside of what we're talking about for social media, but when you're listening to people talk, when you're listening to this podcast, you're listening to the actual content and you're ingesting what that content is. So I think there has to be some level of that when we're talking about a listening program is the, what are they saying? Again, that's a little bit more of a qualitative take than probably some would like to say, especially technologists who might be very, numbers driven. But I think there is a qualitative element to listening that is important.
So glad you broke into that. I like that you broke down the wall between the metaphor of listening and how it's been adopted as a technical term, but also how it's just an everyday action. Like when we listen to each other right now, we're not just waiting for our turn to respond and try to get another marketing idea out towards those people. We're actually trying to ingest what they've said, process it, and respond. And that does take a quantitative along with that qualitative of how big of a message is it, but also how do we listen and react to that and adapt it or respond in a meaningful way to that audience. That's interesting.
Okay, I'm gonna challenge you on that one a little bit, okay. Matt, because I'm secretly the cantankerous one.
it's so secret.
That, don't tell. What you described is improv. The act of listening and thinking of what you'll say next instead of just saying something next. And I think social media is an improv enterprise and community are improv enterprises because it's active, true listening versus traditional marketing has often been trained to blast out instead of listen. So challenge you a little bit on that notion. And the other sort of premise I'm coming in with that bothers me a little bit is that I think that we listen for what we want to hear. I'm raising kids. I see this happen all the time. They hear exactly what they want to hear. And I think metrics can be used to prove or disprove whatever you'd like them to. And so I guess I'm asking all of you guys, how do you think you overcome that notion and that instinct to want to prove yourself right?
That's incredible. I do want to respond right back to the improv part, which is the idea of improvisation is, yes, you're responding very quickly. It's almost that same idea of wit where you're just responding instantaneously, but you have to process what people are saying. And that means you're paying attention to what they're actually trying to say and not just waiting for your turn to override what they're saying by pushing your agenda. So there's,
Agreed.
There's a back and forth as opposed to this idea that it's a one-way stream of information. And that's essential to either kind of
go
for it.
To be fair to listening, and I got some good listening stories too. We've had some good experiences. But, you know, it doesn't have to be real-time response, Amy. It doesn't have to be improv. So we had an example where we had an agency and they were helping us with one of our blogs, one of our programs, product lines. And they went out and did some keyword listening, which is, you know, mostly BS. But they came back with, along with a keyword associated with your product, you know, people had these concerns, you know, security, portability, price, you know. And they did have like four or five or six different topics. And then they used that to build their blog editorial calendar over the next 6 months. So there was a case where it was a response to what people were talking about, but it was not a real-time response. It did not require the level of agility that Oreos had at Super Bowl. Mm. So would that still be considered improv?
In some ways, I'm bringing that concept into bear because I actually think I want to bring improv training into my company. I took improv training, and I think that concept is actually the kind of listening we need to be doing. So I'm actually supporting the idea, and I really actually love your notion that you can do it with immediacy and you can do it with longer term.
Yeah, I mean,
because I'm in favor of listening.
I mean,
listening.
I think the strategies around, you know, what I would call listening for engagement. So, you know, listening with the insight that you will be in a, you know, quickly turning around and responding is very different than the notion of listening to, over the long term, improve or change a process or to cycle feedback into people who might not have organic feedback to listen to. I mean, when you think about some of the groups that are not naturally aligned to the marketing function, those are the groups that get so excited when you start feeding them data, not even data, but just sometimes even just anecdotes out of,
oh yeah,
you know, just some cool verbatims.
No, I remember one when I was in engineering and before I even got into the social side of things, really, I was just doing Twitter for the fun of it. I was on the VNXC development team and we did a pretty tight integration with the way ESX processed creating storage. So you could do it all from Unisphere as a GUI. And somebody said, this is the coolest thing ever. And I walked over to the guy's desk and showed him that tweet, the guy who wrote the integration. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, customers like what I do? That's
right.
Incredible.
Right.
He's like, he'd never been told that his entire career of like 20 years of developing. And to have that end-to-end just through Twitter was the first time that anecdote was just so powerful that you're like, this means something.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it doesn't always have to be these large formalized programs. But at the same time, if you have a structure where you have the ability and the people and the connections to start to feed these less listening for engagement right away, but more listening for process improvement and ideation, right? So sometimes you just can get a great idea from someone who's talking about, you know, your products or your competitors and social. And so to be able to know and have the channels to start filtering that feedback. And again, that's one of the most exciting things about joining, you know, leaving the vendor side and moving on to the client side is because you actually have the ability to, you know, build that network, those relationships, you know, within your own company so that you can, as you're just casually listening or listening for more of a formalized program, you can start to cycle that feedback up to people who can really benefit from it.
That raises the question for me, who listens? Who is listening? What part of the corporation or are multiple parts of the corporation listening?
Mm-hmm.
How is it for you guys?
For us, you know, we are in the process of kind of building out what the listening function is going to be. At very minimum, obviously the people that are helping kind of strategize marketing, you know, communications, they should be listening. But in my full vision of the kind of listening function is to enable people who are passionate about getting feedback straight from the source and empowering them to start doing some listening on their own. And again, it doesn't have to be through these very formal channels. It can be as simple as setting up a tweet deck for someone, right? But essentially educating people that this great resource of feedback does exist and raising awareness for the practice for people that doesn't necessarily come naturally to, I think, is something that I'm definitely passionate about doing at EMC.
Does support listen?
Yes, support does listen. Matt, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the support team.
Sure, sure. Yeah, we have an e-services division of our support team, which was pretty progressive. They spun up a few years ago, even before the social team reached out to them. They already had an organic group going up. They have a centralized group that focuses on social interactions, and that's kind of progressed with time where they now have a subdivision that is actively listening to keywords, very intelligent keywords because they're engineer types, based off the product lines, and they interact and try to do anything that would lead to case deflection, mm-hmm. which again leads back into the metrics because I find one of the most difficult things is how do you prove that you prevented a case through social? I don't think there's a single intelligent answer to that.
And to pull the thread, one of the things I just want to sort of pull back that as I'm listening to this conversation, I'm very much in favor of listening. I think I get a little tweezy whenever, a little smidge, when we talk about metrics. So listening versus metrics, I do think we're having in some ways parallel but different conversations. I think metrics, when you try to apply hard science to it and you talk about things like we've got data to back this, I think that becomes very, very difficult because I question how much of that is hard science versus the black arts. So I think in some ways I'm hearing consensus around the concept of listening and different ways to do it and different ways to apply it. But just wanted to throw that caveat out there. I think listening versus metrics is actually a discussion, mm-hmm. Which one gets weight. Because I continue to be challenged with the concept of people wanting metrics. They appreciate the concept of listening. And I think you can tell a narrative. There's an anecdotal story to be made of listening. And I think you can, and again, some great points Carrie's making. I'm being converted. I'm open to conversion in terms of how you do that quantitatively and qualitatively. But I think one of the challenges going in is I think you have to listen with belief. It's a conversation I was having on Twitter the other day that you can measure, but you have to have an audience that's slightly primed to hear you. And conversely, if people are so willing to believe in their program and not willing to cut anything, change anything, and truly derive business intelligence from the listening or metrics, then you've got the problem on the opposite end of the spectrum. So I'd kind of love to hear from everybody about that. What do you do when you've got people who see no wrong and people who see no right? How do you engage?
You mean internal people?
Yeah, I think a lot of what we're talking about is listening for the sake of proving a point internally, getting funding internally. I mean, there are things to be done externally with this kind of listening and metrics, certainly responsiveness in terms of listening, but metrics are often used to prove some sort of a point.
Totally agree with that. Carrie, so, I mean, how would you, if we came to you being like, I'm trying to change X business unit's belief in this and try to get them towards this through social listening, how do you lead that to an intelligent, measurable, but also powerful story?
Sure. I think with social listening, the first thing you have to ask yourself is obviously what are you trying to prove? And is social listening even the right tool to do it? So I was recently speaking with an internal contact at EMC, and we were talking about what they were trying to do, and I kept kind of pressing the issue. And at the end of the day, the person that he was trying to measure if he was actually reaching is not the kind – they would not be talking on Twitter about what he was trying to measure. There is absolutely no – you know, you have to think about what is this channel and how can we actually – how can we measure on it? And so the first question, is social listening even right for your program? And if it is, then you have to think about, well – what kind of study are we designing? So if you were to do any kind of other research, so if you were to do a survey or a focus group or any other kind of more traditional type research, you would spend a lot of time thinking about what's the design of my study? You know, who am I benchmarking myself against? What's the, for survey, language, what's the different scales I'm using, what are the questions, are they biased, all those kind of things. The same questions need to be asked in social listening. So if you're going to try to put together some kind of report proving that your program was effective, you need to ask yourself, okay, well, how do I put context around that? Because to the point earlier, if we just say it got 1,000 tweets, well, great. But if you can say, over the last 12 months, we have ranked third next to these two competitors in our relevance in big data, for example. But we did this program, we got people talking, and all of a sudden, our share of voice has shifted, and we have now overtaken XYZ company in terms of our presence in big data. And then again, if you can start to say, and this social also drove clicks to this white paper, we can start to make a case that way. You can start to pull some great verbatims, start to build a story and a narrative around the metrics and the qual. And I think that is when you can start to tell an interesting story. Does that make sense?
And I'll just jump in. It makes perfect sense. But yeah, then the devil's advocate in me says the challenge will be, how does this, what impact does that have on sales? Who cares?
Yep. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think you have to think any marketing program obviously has more direct calls to action than others, right? So it's not practical that every single conversation that you have on Twitter, every single marketing program is, you can directly tie back to a specific sale, right? So, but if you can start to say, well, we are all of a sudden much more present in this conversation. We're all of a sudden increasing clicks on our white papers, which we know inbound marketing does in the long term help drive sales efforts. If we are increasing the number of people who are talking about our products, so some of the really cool listening vendors not only can allow you to measure the number of times these terms were used, but it can also measure the number of distinct people who mentioned those terms. So if you start to see increased participation from a different group of people, that in itself is kind of an interesting thing to track as well, right? So I think I realize there's always like a is this driving sales ask, but I think that there's some more, you have to think about, is the social program you're trying to run even, is the direct action.
Is it geared towards sales?
I think what's
kind of cool about social is, no matter what model you're using of funnel, so sales funnel or spiral, yeah, or I've seen several used around here. I've seen a lot of models where, okay, you show a funnel and you show different parts of your sales funnel and sales motion, and then you show different assets and activities that count, quote unquote, towards each of those sections. Mm-hmm. And I think actually, Amy, the cool thing about social and hopefully the way you can frame it is that the cool thing is that actually social can be used in each one of those phases. If it's driving to a registration and a lead, if it's driving to a thought leadership piece, if it's driving to some webinar when people are in the consideration mode, the whole community aspect and support forums and things like that, and all the happy customers, those are also proof points that are useful.
Yeah.
So I think what's cool is actually we drive across the funnel.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I think you just hit something that I've noticed, and that is that social is applicable in a lot of different strategies.
Some people just think of it as the some people will pigeonhole it and say, oh, it's just for awareness.
Right. Yeah, you're always right. So you're part of the social media team, so you're going to drive awareness to this new project, right? It's like, no, we can do so much more than that. We could drive people to events. We can drive people to what I've been focusing on lately is driving them to our new products, and not just the events for the new products, but also the documentation around it. And you're really seeing that there's the community play on top of it. And just the idea of showing, it's really nice. I think you just hit on a point that shows we don't need to show causal connectivity to get back to our scientific language. We don't have to show that social causes people to want to buy more necessarily. But if we can show a correlation with the rise of activities that are also heavily correlated with sales, we have a pretty valuable scientific basis to make an argument for our success.
No, my argument there, I don't disagree with what either of you are saying. And John, I love your point about it drives across the funnel. I actually do agree with that. And I think the danger is when you look at social as unilaterally instead of thinking about all the applications. Mm-hmm. But I think that we're talking about listening with belief, because we're all converted. And I just think it's interesting. Again, I'm definitely being devil's advocate tonight, but these are issues I've hit. I'll expand the ban of time. So if one of the listeners happens to be one of the guilty parties, I don't see how that would be possible. But within the last week, I've had these conversations, somewhat combative, because if you don't listen with belief, if you don't start with the assumption, a base set of assumptions that this is possible and social is not a waste of time, it's just very difficult to prove. The measure of proof becomes higher. So I am very interested in what you're saying, Carrie, in terms of how to change that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think as we're talking about, you know, Matt, as you were just saying, you know, we're not just driving awareness, but we're also driving people to a thought leadership piece or to our website or to, you know, XYZ. I think that's where you can get really interesting with listening, because you can, and metrics specifically, because you can actually say, okay, against these very specific calls to action, let's measure against each of these and report on each of these and not just say, okay, well, you know, we have 1,000 tweets. So as you're designing even content and promotion around that, design it for the notion that you want to have to measure it later. So if that's putting, you know, specific bit.lys on things, if it's putting, you know, specific hashtags on things, and I'm not saying design content specifically for measurement, but if you can help that along the way, it really helps, you know, shape the story afterwards. And so you can actually say, well, here was my content calendar, here was the calls to action, and here's how we delivered on that.
Oh yeah. No, I've done that when approaching it in that order where you know what you're trying to prove beforehand, which mm-hmm. I've been triggered to that because of the awareness your team's driving, the sub team that carries on. I made separate bit.lys on the traffic we wanted to drive to a webcast via Twitter and the traffic we were driving to a webcast via traditional direct marketing emails and that sort of outreach. And the numbers coming back from them just showed that Twitter was significantly better at engaging an audience and getting the click-through rate we were after. And that was something like you didn't have to be sold. Most of those people thought that Twitter was stupid, but when I could show them that my 5 tweets were more successful than their 5 emails to 50,000 people, like, as far as I'm concerned, I can raise my hands happily and be like, I won this one. Twitter is a better medium for what we were trying to achieve here.
And winning is important.
Winning is definitely important.
Crushing your enemies is important.
And you know, Matt, when you can start even coupling that with, okay, well, at Bluefin, we would always try to normalize things based on ad buys, right? So we would say a company got this many tweets about their social TV ad that they put on, but and their spend was this much. So we can start to normalize a tweet per spend number. So when you start to say, okay, you know, I know that, you know, you're that's when it gets really interesting.
Are you putting a dollar value? Are you coming back to me as your customer, Ms. Consultant, and giving me a dollar value to the number of retweets I got?
Cause, oh yeah,
because I that's
going to cause John to bring out the rage cage.
Yeah.
No, I'm not at all saying that because, but I am, I, oh my gosh, I know, no way do I want to try to put a value on a tweet because that is never been done. And
it's been done to me.
And I'm
it's
not at all trying to go down that wormhole. Trust me. I will not play the consultant role there, but I'm just saying, all I was saying there is if you can find data to help normalize the claims you're saying, so I'm not putting a value, but I'm saying, you know, if Matt, if you're saying I drove X many views through 5 tweets, whereas the email team drove X many openings through 1,000 emails, you can start to kind of normalize things based on other data streams that make it a more apples to apples comparison. That's
paying
all
attention
I was going
to
there.
The ratio. So if I said, exactly. 5 tweets via the EMC Corp with 26 or so thousand followers, while you sent like 50,000 tweets, 50,000 emails. To one person each, you can start to see the ratio of
exactly.
Likelihood of people seeing it and get to a base where you're like, oh, well, the value of this was greater than that.
Yeah, it really goes one level deeper there, though, because we have a tendency to talk to the same people. And this maybe goes to what Carrie was saying about different populations and measuring that, because I know who my regulars are and our regulars in the community, and it changes over time. But there's a few thousand people that are actively participating in our conversation. And if your tweets just gathered those people to join the webinar, and if the emails were to directors and CIOs, then you're apples and oranges. So you also got to be careful that you're not just fooling yourself, that you have the same, you know, if your goal, business objective was to have a certain set of people show up, you also have to recognize that in your measurement.
Very valid.
Yep.
And back to Amy's point, it's still a difficult conversation to even convince people, like, all right, so you got this in front of a bunch of people on Twitter. How do I know how many of them are CIOs?
Oh, no, clicks work for me, too. Clicks work great.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that actually gets me to my other favorite point of the thing that drives me crazy, since this is really my therapy, metrics therapy session. metrics can prove any point. And the other thing that makes me nuts is people keeping dead programs alive with false numbers. Everything is, honestly, metrics reports that have nothing but flowers and sunshine coming out of their butts make me nuts. Something is wrong. Something needs to be improved. Something should change. Every metrics report is not a winner. What do you do with that? I mean, how do you, don't want to be the one who's like negative Nancy. And at the same time, be realistic, people. This is about I don't know, maybe it's a corporate problem in general, but I feel like in social media, we're so sensitized that we can measure everything and that we have to kind of prove ourselves, that we can get into a trap of maintaining programs that should be killed in the back mercilessly, but we continue them.
So I think I can frame this. So Carrie, have you ever been asked to assess a program success and give it either the thumbs up or thumbs down to be axed?
You know what? I think one of the fundamental things you never want to do, obviously, is to make a decision on incomplete information. So I think that's what we're speaking to here, is that some listening number is saying that a program got a couple thousand tweets. That is absolutely never going to defend or not defend a program. I think a lot of it is coupling up listening data with any other, both data and just strategy and, you know, innate knowledge that you have about the program. I think, again, I'm talking a lot about story arcs today, but it's like, if all you have is a pie chart or a line chart saying, here's the tweets I got today, that is, you know, no reason to ever defend a program. And so if that's the level of detail that we're putting out, I think we need to think through why that is and what we could be doing to improve it.
Well, to clarify one thing, not just programmatically, yes, that's important, one example, but the concept of us measuring and counting things just to have it go in the green column, the plus column, however you code it within your company. I get a little frustrated when we provide numbers that look good. I mean, it's clicks versus it's hits versus uniques in old web parlance, right? Be real. Like, somebody here has to say the social media has no clothes on. You know, somebody has to come out and say it.
Yeah, it's like, are you measuring your own, you know, are you trying to pat yourself on the back or are you trying to improve your program? And it has to be the latter, or else you're just going to end up with whatever numbers that will make yourself look good.
What's your strategy for delivering that intelligence in a way that people can hear? Because again, people don't like bad news, but I think we measure things. We do measure pat on the back measurements oftentimes just to, because you're on to the next thing. We move at such a pace. So what do you do to get meaningful measurements and deliver less than pleasant news with them?
I think if you approach people saying, you know, you have to think about it, personal psychology, right? Like, you're not attacking them. You're not attacking their program. You're just wanting to improve the process. And so I think showing truthful numbers is always better than showing numbers that have a spin to them. But I think it's always better if you can also not only say, well, you know, this program is not successful and here's the numbers that kind of back that up, but then try to lead the conversation in a way that, do you have any metrics that show programs that are successful and can you start to back into why those are successful and start to lead the conversation that way? Not only with listening, but obviously with any kind of marketing program, always a good strategy when you're delivering bad news is to try to play a little bit of a consultative role in using the information to help transform a program going forward.
Well, that sounds so hard.
It is, but worth it.
Sometimes the velocity is the good thing, right? Because you spent all this money, you did this project, it worked okay, call it a success and move on, right? Because always in the corporate world, there's the next project. And so what I've seen in a couple of cases is groups that weren't that successful, sure, they put a bow on it. They explained what ROI they did get. You know, they spent a huge amount of money. And then they just go on to the next thing, you know, and we don't talk about it anymore, which is okay, right? It lets them save face. They just move on. Just shut it down and, you know, the program is now over and now let's go on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. That's been successful for us. That's a successful strategy. Anyway.
The cut and run strategy.
Well, yeah, this all reminds me of a presentation class I took a few weeks back where we make a lot of PowerPoints. I don't know about you. I make a lot of PowerPoints, like basically everything. If I'm asked for a document, it's like, no, don't put it in Word. Make a PowerPoint of it just so I can copy and paste it into my updates for my upper management. This is just kind of how we work in here. But we make a lot of them, but not to ever be presented. They're never optimized for for presentation style. They're more just like a medium by which we try to convey some information. And I think a lot of our metrics follow the same principle where we show them just to show them because we should be showing them. And then once in a while, once in a blue moon, there's something that we're really actually trying to measure and improve upon because it's important and we're going to take the time to meditate on it and invest an afternoon to see how we can grow. But a lot of times, yeah, we're just running. We're running as fast as we can to the next project, and thought is at a high cost to us.
Yeah. We've had situations where the metrics have shown a fall off, but yet we think the project is still good. We had a situation. So we have a vastly successful community site, right? The forums, and there are, I don't know, it's like 100,000 visitors a week, and roughly. Maybe more. I've no idea what the numbers are right now. But it flattened off. It flattened off a year or two. It was going up and to the right, up and to the right, up and to the right for 10 years. And then a year or two ago, it began to flatten off. And we're like, crap, what do we do? Did we break it? What did we break? And this is vastly important to us because I think it's involved with call deflection. We can't prove it. We don't try to put a number on it. But it's clear that people are going there for break-fix discussions that otherwise they'd pick up the phone for. You know, we tried changing our front page. We tried, you know, we looked at our page load times. We like tried all this different stuff. And eventually we've determined it's the rate of growth has either been flat or negative or slightly positive for a couple of years now. And we just determined, well, actually what was happening was a lot of that, what we were seeing, some of that growth was in chit chat. And the chit chat has moved to other channels like Twitter. And so, the number of threads that were being answered were still good. So, you know, it looks like people were getting to where they could go. The Google traffic was still good. So eventually we kind of shrugged our shoulders and said, well, okay, the numbers are flat, but it's okay. I don't know. We went with that and just kind of justified it that way. I don't know. Is that hand wavy? I suppose that, I mean, we had a justification for it and everybody nodded. So I think it was okay.
Yeah. But I think what's really important there is that you took the time to say, okay, we know the numbers are telling a story, but let's really dig in and figure out what the full story is. And you were able to tease that out because you had the quant numbers behind you to guide that finding, right? And I think that's how you always want to, not always, but I think that's how you often want to go into any kind of metrics or measurement, is not necessarily, especially with social, when there is so much skepticism, maybe you're not going in with the notion of saying, okay, this program is a success or a failure, but at least you can start to ask the right questions. So what are these numbers indicating? Let's start a conversation about it and have the metrics guide a conversation. And often, even if people are, you're maybe delivering some bad news and people are standoffish, at the very least, once you start getting them talking, you can maybe start to tease out, okay, maybe here's some indicators as to why these numbers aren't as positive as they should be. And then you let people kind of arrive at the answer that you were kind of trying to get them at in the first place.
Okay, so listening public is going to want some practical tips. We're getting some feedback on Twitter. Around the table, what should we be measuring? What's your favorite metric?
Oh, favorite metric. I really like a combination. If you're trying to do some just basic high-level listening, I would say make sure you're listening. Share of voice is always a good metric, and it's a very, I know that's very vague, but to essentially choose your product, choose a list of competitive products that are similar to yours, and to start to do two things. One, get an idea of how large your social footprint is, your social buzz is around maybe your product compared to your competitors. And then start to do what I call spike analysis, which is look at a trend over time and say, okay, maybe we're ranked number three as it relates to big data, and these two companies are really beating us out. Why is that? Let's look at the spikes and figure out kind of qualitatively what's driving that and what's driving their presence. And I think if you're just trying to tell a very high-level story, those two things are often the first place I start, because that will often lead me down the path of, okay, I know this company is really hitting home the messaging around big data. Here's kind of the type of content they're putting out. Here's the engagement that they're getting with that content. Here's, you know, what we're putting out, and we're getting less engagement, and let's start to shape our strategy to fix that. I think that's a very...
If you have engagement problems, I suggest kitten pictures.
Absolutely.
It works every time.
Kitty. Yeah.
No, seriously, yeah, you'll change your metrics profile entirely. Pi Day, Happy Friday, mm-hmm. Here's a kitten. My engagement numbers will beat your engagement numbers any day.
Yeah. And one of the metrics, I mean, so carry is so crucial to our, as in Amy language, which is brilliant, at our high level listening, paying attention to the big picture. Mm-hmm. From a low level listening standpoint, I like to pay attention to when I at the cause and effect of when I ask people to get a message out for me, how much they do so. So if I directly ask an audience, like, hey, would you mind retweeting this? Or this is coming up, would you mind helping me promote it? And then I see those tweets go out and the registrations go up for something. That ability to causally connect the request with a direct action by an audience, for our audience out there listening to this podcast, and for me personally, I think that really highlights my value to the team, and it shows the legitimacy and the mutual respect in the community, and that really helps my case.
Well, here's my practical tip. I'm serious. I think of metrics. I don't have much use for high-level metrics, but I think of metrics like I think of ROI. Asking the question, what's the ROI of social media, is like asking, you know, what's the flavor of basketball, or what's flavor of the blue sky? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You have to ask what the ROI is of a particular campaign or motion or project. You can't say what's the ROI of social media in general. So what I like are metrics, the ones that I find useful are metrics around a specific campaign or a specific ask, like what you just said, Matt. But, you know, when we have people coming to us about a certain promotional thing or a campaign or a webinar they're trying to drive to, we, the central organization, aren't staffed for it. So we make them go out to Bitly and make special URLs with source codes and things like that, that we can track in Omniture for all their different assets, for all their different tweets. And then we make them load them all into the system to go out with through the corporate channels and their own channels. And so that's interesting kind of metrics. It's a fair amount of work, but then you can actually ask a question and get an answer. That's the kind of metrics I like.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's great.
Amy, do you have a favorite metric?
I do. I really, number one, like to ignore metrics as much as possible, because I think that in the end, a lot of marketing is golden gut. And what we've talked about here, we've come up with that again and again. Like, even if metrics disprove things because you don't have the proper way or right way to measure it yet, sometimes the idea is the right idea. And at the same time, sometimes you have to let it go. So the metrics that I've used most effectively are always, always comparative. So rarely does an independent number make a difference. But, and I think Carrie was talking about this as well, if you can position it within normal norms and trends, mm-hmm. I think it's much more effective. And my very favorite is, imagine the world if you didn't do it. So, you know, start from there. So imagine a world of zero, all other factors. Would the world sit still? Would it remain the same? Nature abhors a vacuum. That's my other favorite saying. In the absence of anything, something will come in. So is that something you want to happen, or do you want to shape and control it a little bit? And I think you can map a metrics story to that, which is still kind of vague. But to John's point, I think you then have to seek the numbers that tell that story. So frankly, I think metrics often follow good ideas as opposed to precede them, which would make sense. But you know what I'm saying. You have a direction in mind.
Wow. Yeah, I think that the four of us going around there left everyone with a lot to think about. We really hit a wonderful conversation that I know resonates, and we're only scratching the surface of how much metrics are going to affect the way all of us use social.
Yeah.
So with that,
hey, Matt.
John? Yep, go right ahead.
I want to get one last thing in. You know what's been the most meaningful thing for me here? Maybe it wasn't on metrics. Actually, it was Carrie's idea of the surveys. And imagine, we don't do this here. I'm imagining this land of unicorns and rainbows where the social team and the team that does all the customer advocacy and listening and surveys, where that we're very closely related. And ours are kind of closely related. And I wish that the social experts were also friends or experts on giving surveys, and that I had access to a lot of survey data. Because then I think Carrie hit it right. These things are very listening. You know, that listening via social and listening via surveys are very related.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to make a prediction that they are going to – a fruitful way for this industry to go would be they would get closer and closer over the next couple years.
Yeah, and the sciences will affect each other, like the science of that social communication and also the science of making a good study that will be reflected through a good survey. They'll go hand in hand.
And I'm glad that calling it a science helps you sleep at night, and I will continue to mock you openly.
Yeah, psychology is still a science, and it doesn't work without somebody philosophizing how the puzzle pieces fit together. So, yes, I call it a science, but only to prove a point. And with that, another wonderfully cantankerous Geek Whisperers. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This has been wonderful.
Great, and thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week. I'm really glad you didn't say the word sentiment analysis, or I would have had to buzz you off the panel.
No.